ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the environment, or you're concerned about how animals are treated, stick around for ACT Radio.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Victoria Moran, who's author of Main Street Vegan and a number of other books about veganism. That's coming up a little later on the show, but first, some news.
Once the most abundant fish in the Rio Grande chub, now faces extinction. Wild Earth Guardian submitted a scientific petition to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service asking the agency to list the Rio Grande chub under the Endangered Species Act. This small fish, once the most abundant in the Rio Grande, has been completely eliminated from the main stem of the river and is struggling to survive in a few tributaries and basins in New Mexico, Colorado, and Texas. According to Taylor Jones, endangered species advocate for Wild Earth Guardians, the Rio Grande chub can't survive without the river for which it's named. The Rio Grande and its namesake fish are facing unprecedented threats. The Endangered Species Act protection will help ensure the Rio Grande chub does not go extinct. The Rio Grande is one of the top 10 most endangered rivers in the world due to significant man-made modifications. Diversions of water from the Rio Grande for agricultural and domestic use has radically changed the character of the river, fragmenting and destroying chub habitat. The chub needs cool water, sandy bottoms, and riverside vegetation to survive and thrive. Channelization and livestock grazing have removed bankside vegetation, and low stream flows have raised the water temperature. Dams separate fish populations and make it impossible for the chub to recolonize historic habitat. Because of the overextraction of water, the river channel narrowed 30 meters from 1998 to 2008. As a result of all of these threats, the chub's population has declined by as much as 75%. The protection of the Endangered Species Act would provide an important safety net for this imperiled fish and for the river habitat on which it depends.
Last month, the Centers for Disease Control released a report stating that over 2 million people get sick and at least 23,000 die each year from antibiotic-resistant bacteria, and that the widespread use of antibiotics in animal agriculture has resulted in increased resistance to infections in humans. The government estimates that more than 70% of all antibiotics used in the United States are given to farmed animals to make them grow more rapidly and prevent them from getting sick as a result of living in filthy, crowded conditions. Through consumption of both animal products and plant crops fertilized with animal manure, antibiotics fed to farmed animals lead to increased human resistance to important drugs. The 114-page report asserts that much of antibiotic use in animals is unnecessary and makes everyone less safe. For over 30 years, efforts in Congress to restrict the use of antibiotics in animal farming have failed due to the influence of pharmaceutical companies and livestock lobbies.
On a sad note, Wildlife Extra reports that since the original discovery of 41 elephant carcasses in Zimbabwe's Hwenge National Park in late September, a further 40 carcasses have now been discovered in what is believed to be the worst mass poisoning of elephants on record. Zimbabwe's Minister for Tourism visited the site of the massacre in the national park and announced that the death toll had now reached 81 elephants, a large number of small animals, and it's still possible that more would be found. It's highly likely that more wildlife, especially scavengers, will have eaten some of the carcasses and they will die in addition to the elephants, so the full extent of the damage may never be known. Five Zimbabwe nationals were originally arrested in connection with the use of cyanide in the national park, and reports now indicate three more people have been arrested. Ivory, cyanide, and a leopard skin were all recovered from the alleged poachers.
Stick around. Coming up next on ACT Radio, we feature a conversation with Victoria Moran, who's the author of 11 books on improving your life and a plant-based diet. And she's the founder and director of Main Street Vegan Academy in New York City. That's coming up next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Victoria Moran. Thanks for being with us today, Victoria.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Victoria, can we start out by having you tell our listeners a little bit about how you became involved in vegetarian and veganism?
You know, it was a process, as I think it is for a lot of people. I remember very clearly when I first heard the word vegetarian. I was 5 years old, and I learned the four food groups in school. And I came home and had this wonderful, eccentric nanny. This was the days before daycare, and my parents both worked. And I recited these four food groups, half of which were animal products. And my nanny said, well, there are people called vegetarians, and they never eat any meat. And I remember thinking, there's all this wisdom of the universe that I don't know. That was one of the first pieces. So it was always fascinating. When I got into yoga at 17, I went vegetarian, and I heard about veganism just a little bit at the edges, that they were kind of strange people. And when I finally learned that it was the kind of strange person I wanted to be, I couldn't do it. I was a practicing compulsive overeater. So I had to deal with my own eating issues first. And then I was finally able at 32 to go vegan, and it was one of the best decisions I ever made.
Well, Victoria, that's a really interesting story, and we want to follow up on some of the items that you brought up there.
I very much enjoyed reading Main Street Vegan. It's a fun book. It made me smile a lot. What does the title mean? What is a Main Street Vegan?
Thanks for the compliment and the question. A Main Street vegan is a regular person. I think people have so many stereotypical ideas about vegans. For a long time, it was the idea that we were all leftover hippies, that we'd either been at Woodstock or would have been if we'd been born. And now that died down a little bit, and it's become more, oh, it's this elitist thing. It's all these celebrities, and now we have a former president. But a Main Street vegan is a regular person anywhere in this country or around the world who one day, whether for issues of animals, and I really believe that that's where most true vegans come from, but we're certainly getting a lot of health vegans as well, somebody just wakes up and says, I saw a video, or my doctor told me at my cholesterol level, whatever it was, and all of a sudden a light bulb goes on. But the person still has to go to work, live with a family that may not be interested in doing this, convince all the people around him that he's not going to keel over from protein deficiency. That's the kind of person that I am and the kind of person that I was when I went vegan. So I'm talking to the regular folks because we're the ones who are going to change the world.
Okay, so a Main Street vegan isn't someone who wears a chicken costume outside of a KFC.
Well, certainly they can. I'm just thinking most Main Street vegans don't have a personal chef with the fabulous spread laid out when they get home from the KFC.
It's a lifestyle change that isn't really that hard to incorporate. Once you make the commitment to it, it really is quite easy to accommodate a vegan diet. And I think a lot of Main Street people don't realize just how easy it is to shift your diet just a small amount, and you can do so much good for the animals, the environment, and your own health.
It's so true. And even if you go all the way and you become a vegan, which I know scares a lot of people, because they think it implies something else, that they have to change their religion or change their politics or how they see every aspect of life, when that's not really it. It's a decision that you have made for humane or environmental or personal health reasons, and you go to the same church on Sunday you always have. It's not the idea, oh my gosh, I'm a vegan now, I have to go be somebody different. And interestingly enough, with that Main Street Vegan title, when Penguin bought the book, they were very happy, but they came to me the next day and said, oh, but we have to change this title because Main Street sounds like the Tea Party. And I thought, well, yeah, I would like to reach people in that demographic and every other demographic, but they wanted to take my title away. And I actually believe that sometimes when we're doing this work, when we really, really want to change the world for animals, that miracles happen. And I sure as heck had one. I was walking up Broadway in New York City. I ran into Michael Moore, the filmmaker, and long story short, he called my editor and convinced her to let me keep that title of Main Street Vegan. Hmm. Yeah, I don't run into Academy Award recipients every day, so it was pretty spectacular. I think that book was supposed to have that title.
And also, Main Street Vegan is the name of your academy where you train lifestyle coaches.
Yeah, that is so exciting to me right now. That you could have asked me about my daughter, and I wouldn't have been happier than to tell you about Main Street Vegan Academy. It's a 5.5-day adventure in New York City, which is kind of Disneyland for vegans. I mean, it's got a shoe store and bakeries and markets, over 200 restaurants, wow. Wonderful Haute Couture, the coat boutique, and all that. So people come here for a boutique experience. The very max number that we can have in a session is 15. So everybody gets very well acquainted. They get very well acquainted for me. I cook for them while they're here and bring in all these wonderful, wonderful instructors, Jasmine Singer and Marianne Sullivan of Our Hen House, Joshua Katcher of The Discerning Brute, Rin Barry, who's the noted vegan vegetarian historian. And they learn from all these terrific people. We have a cardiologist from the Montefiore Cardiac Wellness Program. All vegans or plant-based people themselves. And in addition to all the learning, we take field trips to these wonderful places, and it inspires people. So a lot of the graduates are working as vegan lifestyle coaches and educators, so they work one-on-one with clients, and they also go out into the world giving lectures, doing podcasts, doing blogging. One of our graduates is JL Fields, who has a really popular blog called JL Goes Vegan. She's doing a lot of work in the corporate world. One of our graduates is from Dallas, and she's starting a cowboy boot company called Kick-Ass Boots. So, you know, it's the inspiration to get out there in the world and do more with one's vegan outreach, and for a lot of people to do it professionally and have it at least as a side business and maybe a whole career shift.
I plan on attending in May.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled.
I'm going to retire from my job as a National Park Service ranger, but I really do want to do this when I retire, to be a lifestyle coach. For years, I've been a vegan advocate, and I'd like to change my audience into people who are interested in a plant-based diet. So my question to you is, what seems to be the biggest stumbling block that causes people to become ex-vegans?
I think it's social. I believe it is human relationships. Even when people say, oh, I just didn't feel so good, or, you know, whatever people say, if you really talk to them at length, you find out it's, well, I got a new boyfriend. He just really didn't want to do this. There's something in the family or the social network that is making this problematic. And when you think about it, we are such social creatures, and we are nowhere more social than around meals or around dining, around every kind of celebration has got food involved. So that's tough. So we do work with the Academy, and I work with my own clients in first just developing this real personal conviction. This power of conviction, and, you know, that's missing in our culture today. I remember years ago going to a lecture by Dick Gregory, who some people remember was a famous comedian in the 60s and 70s. He became a vegan and did a lot of juice fasting, a lot of advocacy. And I went to his lecture, and afterwards I was waiting to get my book signed, and this woman was in the line, and she was gorgeous, and she knew it. And she was cozying up to him and kind of rubbing up against him, and then she whispered something in his ear, and he still had his lavalier microphone on, and he said, "Sister, respect yourself." And that, I think, is what is missing in our culture. If we really respected ourselves, we would respect the power of our conviction. I have made this choice. This is how I'm going to eat. This is how I'm going to live. But because many of us were not brought up that way, it's just kind of like, yeah, okay, I tried this for a while. I didn't like it. I'm going to do something else. I think it's really important. If this is your commitment and your conviction, this is what you're going to do, and we're going to work out if maybe you're not feeling so well or this or that. There are all kinds of ways to deal with that.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because I just happened to be, like, surfing the news last night, and I saw an article about a man who went from, like, 406 pounds down to 160 pounds, and he said that he, you know, decided that he needed to change his lifestyle because his wife was crying that, you know, that she might not, he might not be around because he was so overweight. She was afraid for his health. And I read the whole article, and it turned out at the end he had become vegan. And he said that he was never going to change his diet because he had passion, perseverance, and persistence. And, you know, this, that kind of captures what conviction is, right? He's made a decision that he wants to be around for his wife and his children, and he has the conviction to do that by sticking to the lifestyle that he feels happiest with, and that's a vegan one. And he, I mean, he looks great. You can, he's a 32-year-old or 35-year-old man that, you know, probably would have never even considered being vegan before. He said he just had a very unhealthy childhood where people were always rewarding him with food. Like, his grandma would take him to McDonald's every single day and get him, like, a double cheeseburger and fries. So, you know, I think if people start to change their diet and as they learn more about the benefits of veganism for, you know, all the things that we've said before, it, you do get this passion and conviction. And it's hard to understand how people can lose that just because of a new boyfriend or something.
The power of other people is very, very strong in a gregarious species like ours. You know, I even see this in my dog, dogs being pack animals. When he's just with us inside, he behaves in one way, and he gets out to the dog run, and all his dogness comes out. And I think we're a lot like that. You know, we want to be accepted. And I think what's so exciting about the growth of veganism is that it's becoming the cool thing. I had an experience a couple weeks ago. I was invited to lunch by a non-vegan, and we went to a macrobiotic place that was mostly vegan, but they had some fish. And when it came out that I was vegan, the friend who had come with her said, "Well, I'm vegan." And my friend said, "You are? I didn't know that." And she said, "Well, I don't eat vegan, but all my cosmetics and my toiletries are all vegan." Well, come to find out, she sells Arbonne, which is a line of cruelty-free cosmetics that people sell as individuals, like the old Avon lady. Uh-huh. But I thought, isn't this funny? It's so cool to be vegan that even people who really aren't try to figure out how they can join the club. This is good.
But how can you even think that you're a vegan except for diet?
It's totally ridiculous. It was just, that's the thing to which I aspire. Just like on food packaging, when I went to my local supermarket, not health food store, just regular grocery store, and there was a display of dates with these big green labels on them that said, "Vegan!"
Dates?
It's a fruit! They've always been vegan! But all of a sudden, this is now a selling point. It's all good.
Yeah, but it is kind of funny.
And it's really going mainstream. I can practically live off food I buy in the supermarket instead of having to go to the health food store.
Yeah, it's terrific. And I see this. I live in Harlem in New York City, And some people say to me, oh, Harlem, isn't that a food desert? Well, no, it isn't. But the supermarket here obviously is responding to the needs of the community. And it's amazing what we've got in the regular store, all kinds of organic produce, vegan, macrobiotic, convenience, main dish things, every kind of soy, almond, coconut milk.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite extraordinary.
And it's happened rather quickly, actually, I think, you know, in the big scheme of things. It seems like it took a long time to get veggie burgers in the grocery store, you know, relatively speaking. And now it seems like vegan products have really taken off. Although here in El Paso, it's still a little bit of a vegan food product desert.
I've been vegan for close to 15 years in El Paso. And sometimes I even forget, you know, that I'm vegan. And I'll go to a restaurant and suddenly think, oh, well, I can't eat this. But, you know, I have to be almost reminded. It's become such a part of my personality, I guess. So what do you plan on doing next? Or do you have a book in the works?
I do, actually, just embryonically in the works. The proposal is with my agent, but that means all the work is yet to be done. Yes, the next project is Ageless Vegan. Everything you need to know
to stop aging.
Look amazing, look great, feel amazing, and age in slow motion. It's so new, I don't even know the title. And what I want to do in conjunction with this book is very exciting to me. The book is prescriptive. This is what I do. I've written 11 books so far. Ageless Vegan will be number 12. And all my books have been nonfiction and what you'd call self-help. They help people change, whether it's about diet, lifestyle, inner change, spirituality. So Ageless Vegan is going to be how to be an ageless vegan. But alongside this, I want to do my first documentary film in which I go around the country and I document people who really are ageless vegans. And most of them, as I observe, are very high raw vegans. And these people are freakishly youthful, and I think they have a lot to tell the rest of us.
Well, maybe you could tell our listeners what a high-raw vegan is. Maybe they haven't ever heard that term before.
Okay, that means somebody who eats a lot of their food raw, meaning that their diet is comprised of vegetables, fruits, nuts and seeds, sprouts, fresh juices, smoothies, this kind of thing. Now, I don't think that it's necessary to be 100% raw to get these benefits, but I really have observed that in the people who have, let's say, 70% or more of their diet coming in that fresh, vibrant, uncooked plant food way, they just do remarkably.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get old like that.
There's some new research that was reported, I think it was from the University of California, that discovered that actually there is some scientific basis for this, that vegans have longer telomeres, which is something on the DNA that helps you keep you young.
I know. It's incredible. Dr. Dean Ornish has gotten very involved in that research. I mean, people know him from being the first person to show that heart disease could be reversed. Gosh, if aging could be reversed, That would completely justify those explorers who sailed to find the fountain of youth.
I just know for sure that it's going to happen after we've all passed on, though.
Great. Be more optimistic.
Start on it.
Yeah.
That's what's so exciting. And people say, oh, it's too late for me. I've heard people say that when they're 40, and I've heard people say that when they're 80. It's never too late because the body is so responsive. And when you start putting live, vital food into the body, it's just like, oh my gosh, where have you been keeping this? And it will respond. I every now and then I run into somebody who becomes a vegan in their 80s, and they talk about how great it is.
Hmm.
Well, it is great, you know, and we should respect their decision and encourage them to get more people in their peer group to become vegan, because as you said, it's never too late to be compassionate and to enjoy better health and to help the environment.
It's so true. And then hopefully there will be things like retirement centers and assisted living places
that are vegan.
I know a beautiful woman in Kansas City who is 80, and she moved into assisted living after her husband died, not because she really needed the assistance, but she figured, well, you know, at some point, so I'll just do this. And she moved out 2 years later because it was so hard to maintain her vegetarian diet.
Hmm. Victoria, you're really doing great work, and we really enjoyed talking with you. Can you tell our listeners where they can find out more about your books, and including Main Street Vegan and your newest book that you're working on? Where can they find out more?
The website is mainstreetvegan.net, and they can find out everything there about Main Street Vegan Academy, about my private vegan lifestyle coaching, about my podcast, the feature film that we plan to do, Miss Liberty, about a cow who escapes from a slaughterhouse. It's all at mainstreetvegan.net.
And even about your daughter.
Yes, she was a great help on the book. She's a lifelong vegan, and she works as a stunt performer. No wimpy vegans here.
Thanks for being with us on ACT Radio, and we'll be seeing you in the future.
Yes, you will. I know you get to all the Veg Fest.
That's right.
Thanks so much.
October is Vegetarian Awareness Month, and the Vegetarian Society of El Paso has several events planned. One, as a part of Food Day at the Art and Farmers Market, the Vegetarian Society will have a bake sale with all the profits from the vegan goods we sell going to the animal rescue group From the Heart.
Also, look for our first annual Best of Veg Awards. The nomination form will be available at our website, vsep.org, so you can go there and vote for your favorite vegetarian or vegan item available at local restaurants.
You can get more information about these events at vsep.org and learn about our vegetarian Thanksgiving dinner in November. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Liz Walsh. For the earth, the animals, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.